Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
John, this week, 130 world leaders will be in New York for the 63rd session of the United Nations General Assembly. The official reason is to assess the goals of the Millennium Development Goals, which is goals related to fighting poverty and disease. But given the crisis on Wall Street and the world financial markets, the latest terror attack in Pakistan, Russian-Georgia tensions, and the conflict over Iran's nuclear program, that's just a few worldwide issues, they will have a lot to talk about. Stuart Patrick, a senior fellow and director of the Program on International Institutions and Global Governance at the Council on Foreign Relations, joins us now with a look at the week. Good morning, Stuart.
Good morning.
So what do you think the group is likely to tackle first?
Well, I think when world leaders meet in New York, as they descend on New York every year, it tends to be largely a talking shop that's very formal in terms of world leaders actually giving speeches from the podium and the rostrum. Most of the work, substantive work on some of these tougher issues, whether we're talking about Iran or North Korea, for instance, takes place in bilateral meetings between, say, President George Bush and some of the major allies. I do think it's going to be a major opportunity for George W. Bush to try to cement his legacy because it's his swan song. But mostly, I think a lot of the concern will be U.S. relations with Russia, which is going to be in the background in terms of the tensions that have erupted over the conflict in Georgia. And the question as to whether or not that's going to complicate the broader U.N. agenda.
When you talk about President Bush, he certainly had, maybe it's fair to say, an uneven relationship with the UN. He gives his last speech Tuesday night. What should we be looking for?
I think he's going to try to challenge the idea that he's been a cowboy and a unilateralist. What we've seen over the past, that certainly in the second term of the Bush administration, is a growing pragmatism and realism, less of the sort of full-throated unilateralism that we saw in the first Bush term. And I think he's going to concentrate on three things, really. The first is, I think he's in his speech from the podium, he's going to give a defense of his freedom agenda, and with particular respect to the ongoing efforts in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And I don't expect that he's going to retreat from that at all. I think he's also going to focus, especially given that the General Assembly will be preoccupied with how we're doing on the Millennium Development Goals. I think he has a justifiable record of accomplishment with respect particularly to HIV/AIDS and the massive increases in U.S. foreign assistance. But the third and final message that he's going to deliver is that he wants the UN to be relevant, and he's interested in international organizations, but that the relationship between the U.S. and these organizations, which, as you pointed out, has been unbelievably tumultuous, is going to depend on a lot on whether or not these organizations are capable of effective action as opposed to just being a big talking shop where nothing ever gets done.
Well, oddly, he might be able to make a pretty darn good case for that, given what's been happening in the financial markets and the global cooperation that's required to bring these bailouts to fruition. That, coupled with the HIV/AIDS legacy that you've already pointed out, Bush might not get laughed out of the hall this week. It's an interesting moment.
Yeah, it is. It is. What's ironic, though, I think there's going to be a huge amount of hand-wringing when it comes to the economic crisis. And we're going to hear a lot of statements from the podium from different leaders, particularly in the developing world, who are concerned that this is really going to make the wealthy Western donors feel a little bit less flush with cash to be able to spend on anti-poverty programs. The irony, though, is that, frankly speaking, this is a task for the world's central bankers. The UN has virtually no comparative advantage in actually dealing with economic crises.
And in terms of the future, Sarah Palin, who is the Republican vice presidential nominee, she's going to be swooping into the General Assembly.
That's right.
What do you think about that? Any significance there? Or, again, since you're giving us a preview of the week, what should we be looking for?
This is part of an effort by the McCain camp, obviously, to try to establish the foreign policy bona fides of someone who you know, is obviously a neophyte in a lot of national security and foreign policy ways. So they've set up a meeting with President Hamid Karzai. They've been working on meetings with the President of Colombia, Alvaro Uribe. I think also a little tutorial with Henry Kissinger as well, which I'd like to be in that room. I think it could be pretty entertaining. But you know, my sense is that this is an effort in preparation for the vice presidential debate in about 10 days or so to suggest that she can hold her own with these leaders, and perhaps you know, some of the they'll get some reports that that the leaders considered her a substantive person, etc. But it's very hard to sort of take the Cliff Notes version of this 10 days before a debate. My hope is that she will get a sense of the tremendous things that the United Nations actually, that's on its agenda, so that she has an appreciation for sort of the array of work that the world body's involved in.
And no doubt lots of pictures. We're going to see lots of pictures from those meetings. Not to be cynical or anything. Stuart Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure.
Stuart Patrick is a senior fellow and director of the Program on International Institutions and Global Governance for the Council on Foreign Relations.
It's more indication that the shifting sort of tectonic plates of reality as this campaign goes on are utterly changing the context of both the Bush legacy and what these two candidates are headed into, McCain and Barack Obama, as the election intensifies.
And I liked your earlier point to Stuart about how there is some great irony here in terms of the Bush relationship with the UN, because in 8 years it really has gone through a number of changes, and perhaps now there is more
actual legacy.
Well, actually, yeah. or even a middle ground between many members of the UN and President Bush. Anyhow,
well, it'll be something to watch, and the debate, of course, at the end of the week. Lots of ways to catch up with us at The Takeaway. You can find us on Twitter, FriendFeed, and Facebook. We're talking about Congress and credit. We're asking for your questions for Barney Frank tomorrow, who's going to be a guest on the program. We're also following the latest violence in Pakistan that killed at least 53 people.
We're also following the Large Hadron Collider. A technical glitch has shut down the machine for perhaps up to 2 months due to a massive helium leak. And, John, you wondered if they were sounding a bit like ducks right now.
Yeah, they're all, the repair guys are walking around. It's sounding like this. Hand me that wrench over there.
We want you at home to tell us your best laid plans. How did they go awry and what did it cost you? 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytakeatthetakeaway.org.
And here's your takeaway for today.
Simply put, you pay Vikram and the other CEOs, you pay them as well as the insurance companies. If they don't like that, they can go become pastry chefs.
That career-changing suggestion from University of Maryland Professor Peter Morici, talking about what should happen to the CEOs of companies getting help from the proposed federal bailout. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Adora Udoji, and this is The Takeaway.